Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We kick off noon with Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation with the piece Crooked Letters Inside the NCAA's Years-Long Twisting Investigation into Mississippi Football. Pulled over on the way here. That is dedication, Stephen. Thank you so much for the time, man. How are you?
The worst part of the drive was not that. It was my fault with the cop. I had two pedal taverns I was behind getting here. I thought of Paul, and I thought, if only I could ran as well as Paul, I would come in and just do like two segments on pedal taverns.
I kind of like pedal taverns as long as I can get around and I give a honk for
right.
the social drink.
Sure.
And I respect what it does for our city, but I'm also not in this area of traffic.
This vicinity?
Yeah.
Well, when you're running late and they're talking about you on live radio and there's like seven people in Chicago Blackhawks t-shirts completely wasted at noon, you don't really feel the hospitality vibe that our city usually gives off.
I can imagine that would be the case.
There were other words I used.
It's understandable for sure. So, Stephen, you're an Ole Miss grad. We were talking before the show. This took you about 2 months to put together.
The story writing process is about 2 months. Investigation was right around 5 years.
Yeah. I don't even know where to begin, because the four parts of this, each one we could spend probably 15 minutes on at least.
Okay.
But just from beginning and throughout, your assumptions, knowing what you do about college football and covering the sport, about your alma mater and what they were probably up to, then what you were hearing in terms of false information.
Right. You don't have to say probably anymore.
Yeah, it's false information. But yeah. I really want to hear this from your perspective of covering this story and sort of the twists and turns of what you thought you knew in the beginning,
yeah,
to what you thought you knew in the middle, to what we all now know at this point.
Oh, wow. It's hard to even start, honestly. I think most people, and by the way, just to do the quick promo, we wrote the piece. I was also part of a television series. It's on Go 90 by Verizon. It's called Foul Play, Paid in Mississippi. You can check it out now on Go 90.
We're going to tweet that out as well, too, at Midday 180.
Thank you. We start with Laramie Tunsil because I think most casual fans and most people who don't have any affiliation with college sports remember that moment, right? So if you start there, that's a story unto itself, right? How not to manage a high-caliber player who comes in under some, let's just say, shady sort of circumstances into your program, and then his life on campus. So what you saw there was the end result of someone who was basically left alone to their own devices, and the people that come on as parasites throughout that process.
And a number of teams passed on him for that reason, which you allude to in the story. That there were a number of other big-time programs who said, this kid's probably too much of a problem.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was worried about phrasing that because he was highly sought after, and college is different than the NFL. So, right, he drops on draft night because several front offices are saying, no way, we don't need to. I mean, obviously, like, I think Conklin goes before him. He's not even the first tackle off the board at that point. And
didn't like him.
Yeah, like
for whatever reason.
A week or two before that, he's projected top three. That's what we're hearing, right? Could be number one overall. In college, it's different. They will take the problems because they think they can manage them. And some programs can, right? Let's not kid ourselves. Real college football powerhouses have people in the periphery that handle problems like a vocal stepdad who's got his hand out at every step, right? There are ways to fix that problem. Ole Miss, because they basically flew too close to the sun too fast, didn't really know what to do. And that's what ultimately ends up costing them. If you don't read anything else in the story, you can take away this. If they solve that problem with his stepdad, if they get someone to get the stepdad to stop talking, or some booster goes and hands him money or gives him a fake job or any of that stuff, we don't know about anything else that happens after that because they can't corroborate the rest of the stuff that they pin on Ole Miss. They got a disgruntled stepdad who, under deposition sworn, he said this in court multiple times, was clearly in it to make money off of his girlfriend's son, right? This guy's a parasite. And if they can fix that problem, none of the other stuff happens.
You said that most programs have a heavy-handed stepfather type.
Sure.
As you said that, I thought almost mafia.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Like it's a system where there's a method for taking care of that.
A silencer out there with big-time programs that can handle these situations.
Sure. You guys remember Albert Means, right? I mean, this stuff is not new. This stuff is not limited to any one school in particular. You know, a lot of people are obviously angry at me right now saying, how could you write this about your alma mater? How could I not? At this point, there's another phase in the story in which myself, ESPN, the AP, you know, CBS, I think Feldman was at Fox at the time. We were all lied to by Hugh Freeze and his cronies basically saying, hey, look, this stuff's not that bad. It's actually on Houston Nutt. Houston Nutt's guilty of a lot of stuff. Being a pretty poor football coach was sort of up top. But 90% of the stuff that came out wasn't on him.
Do you feel now like the lies you were told was simply to preserve that recruiting class before the truth could get out after National Signing Day? They didn't want any of the truth getting out about everything they were up to under Hugh Freeze simply because they knew that could affect some of their commitments.
I think it was their first concern, but the problem is they didn't walk that out. And what they didn't think about was the fact that they could tell us whatever they wanted to. And by the way, I wrote this in the story. I talked to five people at the university over the course of 24 hours before I wrote that piece. I didn't just get a phone call from one guy and we ran it. You know, this isn't, I know the perception of modern digital media and the blog culture. I talked to five people who all said the same thing. And in retrospect now, the fact that they all said the same thing in almost the same manner, of, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but you kind of beat yourself up in, you know, as a reporter for that stuff. I think it was the recruiting class. But again, I also think it was the hubris of a guy like Hugh Freeze. When you look at his background and the way he came up, he wasn't trained for these kind of moments. You don't know what you don't know when it comes to, you know, big time college football coaches. And there's a reason guys climb up the ladder in the way they do. There's a reason why it's beneficial to be a coordinator and assistant for a major, you know, come up the Urban Meyer tree or come up the Nick Saban tree. Those guys are successful because they learn so much before they ever take that first head coaching job. This was a guy who was at Lambeth, 1 year at Arkansas State, falls into the Ole Miss job because at the time it was one of the worst open jobs in the country that year, and they could not find anyone to take it.
Well, and Coach Michael Orr, also at Briarcrest, right, in West Tennessee. But I'm struck reading the piece. A lot of the coaches around him, you know, everyone, and we did this on shows like this immediately. How is Ole Miss doing this? You know, red flags start to fly.
Right.
When you see Ole Miss recruiting at this level, and that's maybe a little bit unfair,
right,
you know, because every other program is probably doing the exact same thing. But we start raising questions about Ole Miss. Do you think the perception of other coaches out there about Hugh Freeze, was it more about him winning immediately as to why they didn't like him? Or was there more of coaches knowing that he put on sort of a phony facade of the pasture Hugh that was out there?
Right.
And he used that to get recruits. And other coaches really knew there was something darker going on there with Hugh Freeze.
Yeah, it's probably the latter, because the winning isn't that unexpected. They underperformed grossly. Again, Nutt and his staff, they were lame duck guys. There was criticism in the coaching community about how poor they had done. So there was talent on the roster. By the way, that recruiting class with Robert Condici and Tunsil and Laquan Treadwell, it's actually pretty shallow. You can ask, you know, ask a recruiting analyst. They didn't do as well as they sort of made out to. But the problem is when you get the number one guy in the country, as well as the number one offensive lineman, the number one wide receiver. And they're
three different positions, right?
They're
number one player.
Illinois and Florida.
And they could explain away Condici a bit, right? Because of the family
connection. Brothers on the roster. Absolutely.
If they end up with two of those three instead of all three.
Sure. Larry Tunsil was probably headed to Georgia. If he's headed to Georgia, I think Hugh Freeze is still the coach. And I think they're probably as successful as they were because they beat Alabama without Larry Tunsil.
And the questions maybe aren't there as much if you land Condici, which you can explain away fairly easily.
Right.
And then one of the other two exceptional players.
All coaches know what it takes, okay? These cultures all understand each other. And when I wrote a piece about these guys, the Bagmen, a couple years ago, well, I think it was funny to see the reaction to that piece. Everyone was shocked that Bagmen from different universities that, you know, they're on the golf course together at the same time. They're friends. It's just the culture of the people that you know. It's not that everyone was blown away that Ole Miss was doing this. It wasn't even that they were blown away that a program that was on the rise. We've seen this before in college athletics. I think people couldn't rectify Hugh Freeze's personality and how disingenuous he came off.
Stephen Godfrey of SB Nation in studio with us. The long, informative piece yesterday at SB Nation on Ole Miss and everything that's gone down there. What initially brought the NCAA to Oxford to begin with, and how long did they end up staying after they found out whatever they found out?
It depends on
what kept them there.
So it depends on who you ask specifically what they show up for, but the first thing they actually work on is track and women's basketball. And these kind of inquiries by NCAA enforcement are routine. They're in the hundreds every year. They actually have officers now that go around proactively and just go and shake hands at practices and go to the same kind of media conventions that we go to just to keep a high visibility. That was one of their plans post Miami scandal, was to be more visible and more approachable. So it starts off pretty innocent, right? They start looking into the ACT fraud that happened under Nutt, and then they They hear the same things that we see on message boards. They're getting unsolicited tips, advice from maybe other rival coaches across the state. And it's enough for them to camp out. Now, while this is happening, Hugh Freeze is building this palace out of thin air, right? And so, look, you can't ignore the obvious. They stuck around because they knew eventually they saw a guy with enough hubris that he was going to screw up eventually. And he screwed up more than once. He screwed up multiple times. This whole narrative that, oh, they picked on us. No, they saw a fat, easy target because you made yourself a fat, easy target.
Paul, you were pointing out something about the quality of the piece where you can at any point click on a name and see the background of the characters involved in this piece that Stephen wrote.
It's a really smart editorial slash design tool where, if you lose track of who's who or as new characters are introduced, all you have to do is kind of put your cursor over it and you get some background. It doesn't take you off the page. It's very unobtrusive and smartly done.
Well, now that we're back on the air, I'm going to take credit for that.
It's all
good
idea.
Great job.
You know,
journalists are really good at computer design.
Oh,
they teach
absolutely.
Us that in school.
I know you write good headlines as well.
Yeah.
So the NCAA is part in this. I love the description of the investigator at the NCAA office and how mysterious the whole thing is. You know, you don't even really know his identity. You found one picture online of him speaking to a group of college kids. But it's funny that they sort of keep up this facade. And it's amazing because no one's buying it anymore.
Right.
But, hey, we're out there for the student athlete and we're trying to protect them. When, as you write in this piece, they're really protecting the business interest of the NCAA and their partners.
Sure.
The entire time.
Absolutely. And they're going to do whatever they can. And they actually have it. It's funny. Everyone talks about what the NCAA doesn't have. Talking about they don't have subpoena power. They're not an actual legal institution. They're not the cops. They're not a district attorney. But what they have is a membership that adheres to these weird, flexible, sort of invisible laws. They can kind of, if you're a student athlete or an employee of a university that's in the NCAA membership, you kind of have to comply with these guys. And they can change the rules as they play, as they did in this particular scandal. And nothing really comes of it. There's no recourse because the membership, that's really just an NCAA way of saying the schools. And really, if we're being honest, it's the conferences where the power and the money are concentrated. As long as they're okay with this, as long as they tolerate an Ole Miss every couple years or a North Carolina every couple years or whatever, Syracuse, whatever the scandal is, nothing's going to change. There's not going to be any kind of moral outcry until money gets affected. That's the bottom line.
You know, as years go on, so many things change and evolve, and not just in sports, but in everything. One thing to me that hasn't really changed about the SEC, and you hit on this in the piece, the weird relationship between rich white boosters who fund college programs and poor black Southern kids.
Yes.
And that relationship, how it's both mutually beneficial, but also keeps one group down.
Sure, it
the
is
entire
parasitic.
Time. And now this is the first story where Leo Lewis and Laramie Tunsil and even the stepdad in here, it's almost as if in an odd way they were able to take some power back with the ability to testify to the NCAA against a program, and it sort of knocked the lid off this. But, Stephen, you know, I mean, you've been around these programs. This hasn't changed over the last 40 years. You know, this is something that's existed in the SEC for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
Not to say it's not everywhere else in America, but especially here in the Southeast.
It's happening right now. This case, this investigation does not change anything because the economic model has not changed at all. There are still people with religious zeal who want their college football teams to win no matter what. If they can contribute to that, they're going to do that. And there is still an unpaid labor force in our part of the country that comes from gross economic inequality. So those two things haven't changed. There's no incentive for anyone to change that model. So it's going to keep happening.
Chad mentioned Leo Lewis. Tell us how they found him at Mississippi State. And do we truly know everything he told the NCAA?
I know everything that he told the NCAA investigators in the three interviews because I was able to obtain the actual information. So I was able, via multiple sources to actually get we don't like to use the word testimony. It's actually a statement that he made because we don't want to conflate the NCAA with a legal institution. As far as how it happened, everyone's still hiding that. Obviously, Lewis has not been put out for any kind of public comment, nor should he. If if I was his friend, I'd tell him, hey, don't say anything because you're being sued in civil court right now on top of all this.
But so, like the first you heard of it was a message board rumor type.
I got a phone call. I was on the road. I was up in New York working on a story, and I got a phone call from an Ole Miss booster. Now, keep in mind, I'd already been lied to multiple times. We watched the Laramie Tunsil thing happen. And I wrote this in the story. I went and met with NCAA enforcement because I wanted to vet this out as far as I could and say, look, hey, I went to this school. I know these boosters. It's a little weird for me. It's not like I'm covering another school. You know, any other school in the country, I probably would have had a different prerogative.
Yeah.
But because I knew more people, I said, you know what? Let's put this to the test. I went and met with enforcement. I believe they were on the up and up, because when you see what happens on draft night, you think, God, these people are just dumb and sloppy. So I keep getting these phone calls that fall saying they've got a Mississippi State player that's going to testify against Ole Miss, that's going to corroborate some of the things that Lindsey Miller said previously that they couldn't prove, and they're going to tie it all back on the Rebels. And I said, this sounds like fan fiction. This sounds like something on the internet. This is not going to happen. And I was wrong.
We know about the cell phones with the sex scandal with Hugh Freeze. How sloppy was Barney Farrar in all of this? The right-hand man for Hugh Freeze.
I don't understand if you're doing this. I wrote the Bagman piece 4 years ago. I talked to multiple boosters at multiple SEC schools, and they all have a slightly different system, but there is one thing you never do. You never use a phone that can be FOIA'd. Freedom of Information Act. Sunshine Law in Florida, different names. If it's a publicly funded piece of communication, that means we as citizens of the United States can ask to look at it. This is not rocket science. This is not four seasons of Breaking Bad. This is one stupid thing that keeps happening. So to say he's sloppy, it wasn't a multitude of mistakes. It was the same dumb mistake made 1,000 times.
You talk a lot in the piece about it not being a question of them cheating, but cheating badly.
Yes.
Who cheats great?
The ones that we're not sitting here talking about.
Yeah.
Again, and everyone wants to, of course, everyone is going to call in the next segment or anyone in reaction, they're going to be fan. Well, I went to Auburn. I know Bama's cheating, right? That's how this thing works. But as long as, again, I don't want to harp on it too much. There's poor black kids who literally come from poverty, right? There's a bunch of rich people around them who want them to play football at their university. This is going to keep happening. It happens every day. And our emphasis at SB Nation was not focusing on the morality of that. Because to be totally honest, in my opinion, I don't care if the kids get money at every school. They should all get money. They should at least get a living stipend.
You write right at the beginning not to forget the T-shirts. We've yet to ask you about the T-shirts.
So
fill everyone in on this.
The gist of the Rebel Rag suit is basically that a T-shirt shop in Oxford, Mississippi is now suing Leo Lewis, another Mississippi State teammate, Dan Mullen, and Scott Strickland, formerly of Mississippi State, now at the University of Florida, because what they allege is the statements made to the NCAA, in which they could not refute, could not argue, couldn't do anything about, if they become officially disassociated when the appeal goes through in the NCAA, which will probably happen in June, they will have had their business hurt and their ability to conduct their business irreparably damaged. So it's basically the legal concept of due process, and they're going to prove that in a court. Well, they say they're going to prove that in a court of law. That's the shortest version.
If Ole Miss could go back and redo all of this and the hiring of Hugh Freeze, would they hire him again?
I bet they would. Absolutely. They beat Alabama twice, y'all. I mean, that's the equity here. That's what matters to these people.
Those experiences. You can never take those back.
Ask any fan of any team. Do they care about vacated wins? No, because they were there. They were in the stands, right, and they were cheering, and they saw their team win. Yep. It didn't matter who was getting money.
Tennessee fans are ready to get their hands bloody right about now, too.
Yeah, I think they'd probably
trade in any bit of success.
If you walk up to a Vol fan right now and say, hey, you want to go 10-2? Here's how. They're going to do whatever it takes. They'll move a body right now.
Completely agree.
Chad'll move it.
And maybe that'll happen at some point. But
you got the cadaver for him there, so you're good.
It's true. So is the big difference here having a smarter version of Barney Farrar in that spot? The programs who don't get caught.
I can't emphasize.
That do the exact same thing.
I can't emphasize this enough, and I'm not trying to wink too hard here, but I talk to a lot of coaches at a lot of universities and people that work in ops and people that work in Barney's former position. They laugh at this. They're miles past this. Okay, this happens every recruiting cycle, and you don't see these scandals, you know, coming up in the 30s and 40s every year. The story is basically just point and laugh at this point, because the people who do this effectively are miles past what happened with Hugh Freeze.
So how big of a role did Dan Mullen play in the downfall of all this?
Well, what we know is there's a sworn affidavit from an Ole Miss player who was very, very close with Lewis. He confided in Lewis that he had been called in by Dan Mullen. All these procedurally, that's far, far against what's supposed to happen with a compliance department. A head coach is never supposed to interact with you if you're being called in by compliance or if you're being talked to NCAA enforcement in any way, shape, or form. You're supposed to be kept apart, right? We know Dan Mullen interacted with him. We know he asked him what he was going to say. We know that they discussed what he should say.
And Dan Mullen also, we know that everyone he would talk to, he would want to know what was going on at Ole Miss. Basic curiosity.
Dan Mullen had a very sweet spot in which he was whipping Houston Nutt in state. He made Mississippi State look great. If you guys remember back, around 09, 2010, he was springboarding Mississippi State for the next job. He had a famously horrible interview with Miami, but he was kind of always on the precipice. You remember he was talked about at Penn State before Franklin. Like, he was going to get that next job, and then it didn't happen. And while it didn't happen, here comes preacher Brother Hugh, and he's pulling kids out of Starkville, Mississippi. A.J. Brown may not be a household name in Nashville, but he was the best recruit in the state. He's a wide receiver at Starkville High, and he went to Ole Miss. This drove Mullen insane. This drove Mullen mad. I had his own coaches telling me this stuff on background. People obviously didn't want to be named publicly because of the repercussions, but saying, look, Mullen became fixated on stopping Ole Miss because he felt that was the key to getting Mississippi State back to a place where he could get out.
If you haven't had a chance to check out this piece, SBNation.com is where you can find it.
We just scratched the surface. We really did.
Steven, this is awesome, man. Great work.
Thank you all for having me.
Great work on this. Absolutely. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Shook the fuzz.
And please tell us how you got out of that ticket during the break. We need to, well, you and Paul both can tell us the secrets to all of it.
I'm more 50-50 guy.
You just got to be friendly.
He just blinked, kind of fluttered his eyelashes.
Paul's got to change the accent a little bit. You'd be surprised, the Southern cops, they hear that New York thing. They're about
sir, how you doing?
Well, okay, we got to work
it out. Go Vols! Go UT!
Oh,
call it both ways!
You got to workshop that.